This is CliffCentral.com.
This is Disrupt with Mpumiklapo, powered by T-Systems.
Good day and welcome to Disrupt with me, Mpumiklapo. Thank you for joining us again on the show. We are, as usual, very excited to welcome new guests with us. Before I introduce our guests, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, speaking at the South African Union Summit in Kigali, said that he fully supported calls for a single African currency, and he also indicated that such a currency maybe would have to be digital. The world is caught up in the craze of cryptocurrencies. Everybody's talking about bitcoins and how they can make their next quick buck, it seems. And everybody is also advocating for digital currencies, which would then almost supersede cryptocurrencies, and we're going to have a discussion on that. We've seen dips, slumps, ups and downs with the most popular cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, and which has almost put a damper on what we saw as the rise of the cryptocurrencies. So the question we're asking today is, with this adoption of cryptocurrency, with the growth of digital money, what does the future hold? What does all this mean and how do we make sense of it? We talk about what is regulated and unregulated, what is covered by legislation. So my guests here today are here to help us understand really beyond the hype, beyond the constant barrage of online marketing telling us to how we can make the next quick buck with cryptocurrency so that we can really understand it and make sense of how we can help us build digital economies into the future. With me today from Hogan Lovells attorneys, I've got Christine Rodrigues. She's a partner at Hogan Lovells and candidate attorney from Hogan Lovells as well, Craig DeBrain. Welcome to you both. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, I'm Pumi. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
How are you guys doing?
We're doing good.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, we're really happy to be here.
It's always good to have lawyers and attorneys in a discussion, and I'm not worried about defending myself from something. So thank you for joining us. The topic today is one that's, very trending, I guess. One would say there's a lot of discussions, a lot of misunderstanding, I would assume as well, about really what is this domain that we're talking about. So just to get us started, I know we spoke earlier about, the destination between a cryptocurrency and digital money. So can maybe just start with a couple of definitions so that we're all on the same page.
Okay, well, cryptocurrency is different to digital money. Although they're both forms of electronic forms of money,
Okay. Cryptocurrency
is different because it's unregulated. Effectively, transactions are recorded in a blockchain in a public domain, while digital money is a legal form of tender, which is regulated by the central bank. In this instance, in South Africa, it would be the South African Reserve Bank. And effectively, it's instead of having the physical form of the currency, you would have the electronic form of the currency.
Okay.
So that's the difference.
Okay. So if I'm understanding you correctly, then would I be correct to say that our money is already digital currency, or that we still need to get there, and that what's leading the way so far has been the cryptocurrencies? Where are we?
So a lot of the times when you transact on the internet, that's a form of digital money.
Yes.
What's important to understand is currently how we transact. And that's what creates the potential disruptor for the banking institutions.
Okay.
So all the financial transactions, and we're talking about regulated transactions, nothing that falls outside the cryptocurrency that Craig can briefly discuss with you,
okay,
is that it goes through the National Payment System, which is regulated under the National Payment Systems Act. And the regulator of that system is the South African Reserve Bank.
Okay.
There's quite a few role players in that system, but effectively who controls the system is the banks. So you have a clearing bank and a settlement bank. The clearing bank would issue the instructions to, say, Mpumi, who ABSA client as an example.
Okay.
You owe Christine 500 Rand, and I happen to bank with First National Bank. And ABSA would issue the instruction saying to First National Bank, we are going to not send money from Mpumi's bank account into Christine's bank account. And
okay,
each bank would keep their own ledger of this electronic flow of money. But now the national payment system only works if all the parties in that system actually have a bank account.
I see.
So that's kind of like where the monopoly is.
Absolutely, because you need to be party to one of those.
You need
entities.
To be part of the bank. Yes. We need to even have a credit card, which is obviously then linked to the bank, to perform a financial transaction. Now, what happens if you are not a banked person? And a lot of the South African population remains unbanked. Or what if you're one of those people that decides, well, I just don't want to take a risk in a banking institution. I'd rather keep my money under the mattress. But how do I protect myself? Because obviously I'm at high risk of my house getting broken into or me getting mugged.
Yes.
And that's where digital money has a role to play. Because in effect, what you can do is you can interpose a fintech company where the central bank would use the fintech company to offer people currency directly. So okay. In effect, what you do is you're taking away a banking institution that's acting as an intermediary. Quite similar to if you look at from an insurance perspective, you have a broker.
Yes.
And offering insurance directly or via an app also creates that disruptor.
Yes.
Because you take out the middleman.
Okay. So I just want to get it then clear. Currently, the reason the banking system works is because we trust the banks.
Yes.
To be able to keep record of our money and then to be able to then between themselves orchestrate transactions so that I can trust that they're keeping record.
Yes.
Of my money. So, Craig, to bring you in then, the opportunity or the disruption then that comes with the cryptocurrencies is that they work outside of that system. Can we talk to how they work outside of that system and why have we seen so many people then gravitating towards it?
So basically, as Christine mentioned, that the cryptocurrency is a form of trade that is between the users themselves, peer-to-peer, and it is falls outside the regulated regime of the central bank. The central bank does not issue or doesn't have control to issue or circulate cryptocurrency. That's why it doesn't intervene in that scope. And
okay.
The value alone of cryptocurrency is in demand and supply between the users thereof.
Yes. Okay, so then let's get into it. Christine, we were talking earlier about how we're going to see the rise of digital currencies and how that can create new opportunities, particularly for the unbanked population. Can you unpack that for us?
Well, one of National Treasury's objectives is obviously to create economic transformation in South Africa at all levels. Now, for example, on the insurance side, you only have insurance cover if you pay your premium. Now, what happens to somebody that's in the rural area that would like to take out a funeral policy or would like to insure their herd of cows or bulls? How do they get access to financial freedom and some economic and to participate economically?
Yes.
They can't because they just either don't have sufficient resources to open a bank account, or for whatever reason, maybe with the banking institutions in terms of their credit risk rating, wouldn't give somebody a bank account. So what would happen here is that the central bank, the South African Reserve Bank, would offer currency directly to those people. But at no in both ends, you wouldn't take the risk of the bank loaning your money.
Okay.
And you're earning interest.
Yes.
And in effect, you wouldn't earn any interest either.
Okay.
On your money.
So it's literally just
just a transactions gateway. You have R5 and you want to go to the corner store and you want to buy a loaf of bread or whatever, you would use that to transact. You wouldn't necessarily gain value in your money. So when you and I transact with the bank, we either put our money in a bank account and we earn interest, or we loan money from the bank in order to purchase a property, and obviously we pay that off, but we're creating wealth.
Yes.
But it allows now people to start transacting and slowly build up their wealth.
Okay.
So for example, if I now can take out a funeral policy in a rural area, I at least know that when I pass on, there isn't a financial burden left on my family.
Absolutely.
And it allows them to recover economically much quicker than if they take all the risk themselves.
Okay.
So banks will never be done away with, just as insurance companies will never go away.
And why is that?
Because
why would we say that?
Because there's still people in this world that want to pass on the risk.
Okay.
I still want to pass on the risk to the insurance company. When I pay my premium and I take out an insurance policy, I'm doing that with the knowledge that I'm passing on the risk that if my house burns down, the likelihood is I've only paid 100,000 rands of premium, as an example.
Yes.
But the insurance company is going to pay me out the value of my home,
okay,
which could be 10 times or 15 times more the value.
Yes.
And the same thing with the bank, where I can decide, well, I want to take the risk of maybe there being a bank that goes under, but at the same time, when I invest in the bank through unit trusts or through investment or through having my money, it also grows in wealth.
Okay.
So all that digital money does in this form is that it allows people to economically transact and to just get their foot in the door into getting some form of financial freedom.
Okay.
And not constantly, you know, being left behind and not being able to contribute to the economy and allow the economy to also benefit them.
Okay. I want to just maybe answer some questions that are in my mind at this point. My understanding of the fundamentals of what the cryptocurrency world is doing is that it kind of circumvents the banking system, so that what we spoke about, so that from peer-to-peer perspective, we can transact and work within that. And so I'm trying to say, as much as, I mean, most of our transactions today are digital, so we could say our money is digital, you know, we very rarely deal with cash. I'm trying to understand what the difference becomes. So if the banks still remain relevant, and yet there's an opportunity for me to circumvent them, what would keep them in the system, except maybe for like different types of investments? Do you understand my question?
But there's, okay, well, yes and no.
Okay.
There's comfort when you transact via the internet or you use your credit card.
Okay.
It is still documented. In the same time, when somebody does phishing or performs a fraudulent transaction, which you can show that you were not party to that.
Yes.
You go to the bank and you knock on the door and you say to the bank, somebody in China hacked into my bank account and siphoned the money out.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens? The bank takes that risk and credits your account with the same amount.
Okay.
With cryptocurrency, who do you turn to? Because if something goes wrong or there's some fraudulent transaction, who do you go to? There isn't a big brother. So you most probably could get higher rewards with the cryptocurrency, but higher rewards, higher risk.
Yes.
And the bank, in the banking, in the traditional banking space, the reward might be lower, but it's far more secure.
I see.
And far more stable, because you do have a big brother either looking after you, or ultimately you have the Reserve Bank that's ensuring with National Treasury the stability in the economy.
Okay. Now let's assume 10 years from now, 5 years from now, the cryptocurrency world has evolved, there's better regulation around it, there's better protections for consumers, the Reserve Bank has accepted it as a legal form of tender, but it's still peer-to-peer. Does that still hold, the big brother, sort of what the value that the bank adds from that perspective?
Well, whenever there's some form of regulation, that means there has to be some form of accountability.
Okay.
At the end of the day, the banking sector has to evolve pretty much as to what's happening with the insurance sector,
okay,
which is based around treating customers fairly. And treating customers fairly is not about that the customer's always right.
Yes.
But it's about that you treat people, you create whatever expectation you create, you're able to deliver on. And obviously, it's the scrutinization of fees and what you're paying for the services. So in general, and this is with any business, be it insurance, being banking, be it the corner store, it's about the value that you add to your clients.
Okay.
And what you're paying for the service that they're providing. It's no different from lawyers. Clients keep on coming back to us because of the service that we provide, that we give them value for money, that we think out the box, that we're able to come up with commercial solutions for them within the confines of the law.
Yes.
And that's what's going to keep any business in place, is being thought leaders is about creating different services and products, and obviously keeping those services and products as low as possible.
And competitive as well.
And competitive.
So I guess maybe then probably the answer lies somewhere around the banks are probably going to evolve. Mm. And what is their bread and butter today is unlikely to be the same in years to come, but they'll most likely still have a role to play in the banking system.
Correct.
Overall. Okay. I want to then shift to the insurance industry, because I know you've spent a lot of time, Christine, working in that space. And I know there's a lot of developments in that space with regards to digital money and how it adds value there. What are the key challenges that that industry faces today based on the infrastructure, the payments regime that is existing today?
So the fundamental principle in insurance is, besides insurable interest, in other words, in order for you to insure something, you have to have an interest in it, is that you have cover if your premium is paid. Now, insurance companies operate in some form in the national payment system, because when they debit your bank account and collect your premium, that's the point. They're debiting it from your bank account.
Okay.
And one of the challenges has been, well, how do you get into the untapped insurable market? And it's not necessarily that you're chasing high indemnity policies. Everybody has a form of property that needs to be insured.
Yes.
But how do you get to that demographic? Because, again, they don't have a bank account. And from that perspective, you know, in terms of the laws that are coming into change, for example, microinsurance insurers are going to be able to offer certain products that are lower premium, but obviously the indemnity limits are capped.
Okay.
But how are you going to offer it if you can't collect the premium? And there's ways that obviously the regulator is looking at it to say, well, don't prejudice people if they don't pay their premium on a monthly basis. But at the end of the day, you have to collect premium for the insurance company to also cover its risk. Okay. Otherwise, it goes into an insolvent position. And this is where it's fantastic if the insurance companies can access through fintech, and the national payment system is changed to allow people to transact just for that economic and financial transaction.
Okay.
Where now you're giving people the opportunity to formally get into the economic regime, and that fits in nicely with what national treasury's objectives are, which it wants the insurance industry to become a lot more transformative, but also to allow a lot more people to become economically independent.
Okay, I see.
So where you have what the banking institutions might see it as a potential negative disruptor, on the flip side, you have other financial institutions such as insurance companies where this is a wonderful positive disruptor, because it opens them up to a bigger client base.
Yes. Craig, I want to bring you in here. There's a lot of existing alternatives in the market. So we know there's mobile money, M-Pesa. I know I read somewhere that MTN speaks about wanting to be the largest bank in Africa. And they're coming at it from quite a different perspective. How does that, and Christine, you're also welcome to contribute here, but I'm trying to understand, how does that then lean into this conversation we're having around digital money and cryptocurrencies? Because then there's also the aspect of mobile money and what they're doing in that world. How do the two coalesce?
So currently, like you mentioned, that commercial banks will be at a position where they have to evolve themselves and also include this circulation of digital currency. And the South African Reserve Bank has looked into it. It firstly launched the project COCA in order to understand how distributed ledger technology will work.
Okay.
In your point of other kind of e-money, it also drafted two position papers to understand how it works, how it will regulate it in any way. And it founded on a basis that other central banks around the world are continuously to evolve and also include e-money into their systems.
Okay.
And those would include like internet banking, mobile payments, mobile banking as well. So the Reserve Bank is in a position where it will definitely adopt e-money and digital money in our regulatory regime. There's nothing definitive about it right now, but it's definitely in the right space.
Okay. And is M-Pesa and that, is that legal tender? Are those protected by the legislation?
Yes.
How does that operate differently to a cryptocurrency, for example, whichever one it may be?
That fits within the banking regime and within the national payment system.
Okay. And the reason for that, is it because of the mechanisms that they use, or what makes it fit in?
Correct. I mean, in order to be to effect payments within the national payment system, you have to be a regulated bank.
Okay.
Or you have to be an authorized participant.
Okay.
So that's where the regulation comes in. It's very strict as to who can participate. So banks have to keep huge amounts of money for solvency purposes. And that's where the regulation comes in.
Okay, thank you. And I just want to make sure we've answered the question fully. So do you see that the mobile money space will grow relative to the cryptocurrencies? Are they moving in opposite direction, or are they moving closer to each other? What's happening there? So if I look at like an M-Pesa, I mean, there's huge investment going into there. We know it's one of the, I mean, they do billions of dollars of transactions on an annual basis across the continent. So there's certainly a lot of momentum around it. Relative to the cryptocurrency space, is that growing, or what are you guys observing around that?
I think there will be a collision when both forms are regulated almost on an equal basis.
Okay.
So at the moment, you know, it's difficult because you have the one that's regulated and the one that doesn't.
Mm.
And the one that's unregulated has the potential for higher risk in terms of, yes, your reward is higher, but also when something goes wrong,
yes,
the risk is higher for you as well. So, you know, I think everyone at the end of the day, human nature is you want to make money as quickly as possible and a quick buck.
Yes.
So cryptocurrency, you know, if you want to make higher returns quickly, that you would use cryptocurrency, or you would invest cryptocurrency. While digital money, because it's far more regulated, or e-money is far more regulated, your rewards are going to be lower.
Absolutely.
And it just depends, obviously, on what your risk appetite is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then we know that, and you mentioned it earlier, that all these cryptocurrencies are built on a digital ledger system, right? Some sort of a blockchain infrastructure. Do you envisage that when governments implement their own digital currencies in the way that we understand them, from a cryptocurrency perspective, that they'll still use the same base infrastructure, the same type of technology? Is that the way forward? So it's blockchain and that type of technology, is that the way forward?
So there are different technologies that are involved. If I can use Uruguay as an example, since they've been the first to adopt digital currency into their payment systems.
Okay.
So firstly, what the user would do is the government has issued Antel mobile phones, and the user would then download the app and register and make its first charge into what is known as Red Pagos. So we presume that Red Pagos is a fintech company where you'll hand in your physical bills and they will credit your digital wallet.
Okay.
So the other systems or other technologies involved would be a system operator, IBM, InSwitch for other functionary support controls. So it's not directly linked to how the blockchain is operated, since that is a public ledger. And we also think that digital currency would be under the regulation of the central bank. So the central bank would be able to see and track those transactions, as opposed to it being public, in the public domain.
Okay.
So I think those, in terms of those, the way that the blockchain would work and the way the technologies under the control of the Reserve Bank would work does differ to an extent.
Oh, it does. That's very interesting, because I know there's a huge number of conferences, discussions, workshops around blockchain and the potential for it. And what I'm hearing from you guys is that the legislation is likely not to go the blockchain route. Am I understanding it correctly, or am I misunderstanding you?
So as I mentioned earlier, the Reserve Bank has launched a project just to look into how the ledger technology works.
Okay.
It doesn't say that right now we're going to adopt it, we're going to make use of it, and this will be legal tender.
Yes.
It just says that we're going to take it under, we're taking cognizance of it, look how it works, and maybe in the future we'll rope it in into our payment systems.
Okay. And Christine, on your side, what you've seen from a legislation point of view, do you feel that we're likely to move more towards blockchain technology as a payment system infrastructure, or do you think that we're going to look at alternatives? I just want to get your views. I mean, you've got quite a lot of experience in the industry as well.
So I can't see that far into the future about blockchain, but my view is that we are definitely changing.
Okay.
We, you know, South Africa is quite a sophisticated market from a financial institution's perspective. I think we always undermine that we a third world country, but we're not.
Okay.
In certain instances, we're far more advanced than other countries of the world. And at the end of the day, I think the Saab's thinking and National Treasury's thinking is to change the regime that it's not institutional based, but it's functional based. So I think at the end of the day, the regulatory changes are going to be made to make the way we transact, be it from an insurance or banking institution, functional based.
So, in other words,
just because you're a bank, it doesn't mean you're going to control the national payment system. What does the economy need for stability? What does the economy need to grow? And functional based could be, well, we need a fintech company that that would allow the bank to transact directly with certain consumers.
Okay.
And that's what I'm talking about, functional based, as opposed to just having institutions that conduct business because they are an institution.
Mm. It occurs to me that as soon as we start talking disruption, whether it's fintech, whether it's a new platform or a new app, regulation quickly follows suit. And I guess it's the disruptive energy that's trying to challenge the status quo. Are we going to see more and more of that, or do you feel regulators, legislators have caught on to the fact that they need to become more proactive within the various industries as these things play out? What's your observations around that?
Yeah, so I could talk about from the insurance perspective with Treasury. Years ago, everything was more just prudential regulation. So as long as an insurance company had enough money to pay claims and remain solvent, that was fine.
Okay.
And then when the financial crisis hit and you looked at potentially all these banks going under, you know, there was scrutiny as to, well, the figures don't necessarily tell the whole story. How you conduct business and the way that you conduct business, how does that affect the economy and how does that affect the people that are using your services? And I think the regulators have recognized that you need to balance the two. You do have to have prudential and solvent regulation, but you also need to steer institutions into behaving in an ethical way. So it's about making ethical and moral profits. It's not about abusing people to just line your pockets.
Mm.
And I think, you know, there will be constant regulation because especially on the financial industry perspective, is it's critical to the economy. And once that collapses, then it's devastation across the board for everyone, whether you're banked or unbanked, whether you're insured or you're uninsured.
Okay.
And that's the intention. The intention is to create not only local stability, but to create global stability, because we all form part of this global economy.
Yes.
So if a huge... From an insurance perspective, there's systemically what they call systemically important financial institutions, which has been recognized globally, that if they go under, it affects not just one country, it affects the world in its entirety. And that's what the regulator is moving towards. You know, make us uniformed to create that financial stability so that everybody on this earth has some form of financial inclusion and stability and has trust in the system.
Okay. And Craig, we know we've seen the taxi drivers across the world, a lot of them fighting these new rideshare apps. Have we seen anything similar in the financial services space? Any, resistance to the change or uprisings? Are you aware of any developments in that regard playing themselves out?
Well, I mean, definitely on the insurance perspective, there's always been a threat with insurers offering insurance direct.
Yes.
Brokers and intermediaries feel like as if they're being cut out.
Mm.
And from an insurance perspective, the regulator is constantly questioning fees of third parties and what they're earning. And obviously, at the end of the day, if you're not performing legitimate services, and you're not adding value, you're always going to feel threatened. So the point being is, if you're adding value, you're providing services, there's nothing wrong with earning fees.
Yes.
It's unfortunately you're going to feel under threat where you're not adding anything back to the consumer.
Absolutely. Let me then bring it back to the legal fraternity, because I know when they talk about blockchain and ledger technologies, there's often allude to the potential impact within your industry. Have you seen any developments there? Are you tracking any trends in that regard?
Well, I mean, in general, you can just now go into Google and say template of a sale of shares agreement, and something will pop up, and everyone will use that and say, why should I go to an attorney?
Mm.
Again, it's about service. It's about, you know, I think the jobs of the future are creative. And although you might have artificial intelligence,
yes.
It's about the creativity and thinking, because computers only think with the algorithms that you insert into them.
Yes.
The human mind is different. It thinks differently. It thinks out the box. It thinks creatively.
Yes.
So with any job, even with a lawyer, it's about how do you look at legislation, or how do you look at the transaction from a strategic, from a creative perspective, and how do you carry through that transaction within the confines of law? And we will be threatened.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of products that you can commoditize.
Yes.
But the need for creative thinkers and for people who think differently and do things differently will always exist. I think in any profession.
In any industry. And Craig, your views, I mean, you're quite new coming into the industry. Where do you see potential for disruption, or where are you seeing that the industry will need to evolve quickly?
So from a lawyer's perspective, my associate is actually writing an article about how blockchain might disrupt the banking industry in terms of the trade we conduct. As Christine mentioned, templates available, and there's been a lot of trade also being conducted cross-border through blockchain, and they say it takes about quarters of the time. So I think those are new developments in the kind of space that I'm in right now at this instant.
Yeah.
And I would concur with Christine on the lawyer's perspective in terms of bringing the human application to your deals, to your matters, to your problems. So yeah, we'll always be challenged, and nothing's going to stop technology from evolving in any kind of space or any kind of industry.
Yeah. So Christine, I want to then go back to the discussion on the cryptocurrency specifically. And to a certain extent, I'm asking for your views and opinions. It might not be stuff that we can clearly, you know, discern from a legal perspective. The way that it's modeled and the way that it's structured vis-a-vis our existing, you know, payment systems, is there an opportunity to bring it in line with what we understand to be the regulated world, or do you feel that fundamentally the way that it's built up, that's not possible?
I think it is possible.
And I just want to qualify my question. The reason I'm asking is because we know that it's a distributed ledger, it's a public ledger. There is no single source of accountability, as you mentioned earlier.
Well, if you look at it globally, a lot of government institutions are raising caution. So they're telling the public, it's not regulated, so this is the risks that you take.
Okay.
And I think it's about creating that awareness and that education. There's always going to be another type of technology or cryptocurrency that's going to disrupt. There's always going to be a wave where people are going to ride because of the human nature of high return. But it's about being educated, and it's about understanding the risks that you take. And at the end of the day, government cannot regulate everything. It's impossible. And government is not as quick as the innovators, as yes. those creative thinkers that are coming up with new technologies and new ways. But it's about, before you enter into a transaction, become educated, understand what you are doing and understand what the consequences are, and then make that decision. But don't go into it willy-nilly, lose a ton of money. It's the same thing as purchasing shares or investing
in like any other investment that one might consider.
And then cry wolf and say, this is terrible, I've now lost everything.
Yes.
And we've seen with the scandals and with corporate governance is that nothing is foolproof.
Mm.
But it's about being educated and it's about understanding what you are purchasing.
And have you seen any cases brought forward to the government by people that have been duped or that have felt aggrieved with what's happened in the cryptocurrency world? Have we seen any cases brought forward? Nothing yet.
I haven't seen anything like that. I don't know if Craig's seen anything. I've just seen a lot of, for example, especially in the EU, like the Italian government has, you know, issued notices and warnings, and they're looking at ways to regulate. So that seems to be kind of the, I mean, at the end of the day, if it's not regulated, what can you do?
Yes.
There's nothing you can do about it. You just got to take it on the chin and say, well, you lost your money, you lost your money.
Absolutely, yeah.
Next time, just think before you do something.
Okay. And Hogan Lovells, I mean, you guys are a commercial law firm focusing on corporates and corporate banking. You're naturally doing a lot of research and trying to understand this landscape. What are you advising your clients? I'm sure you're getting a lot of questions in this space. What are the three things that you're telling your clients to do and to look out for as they go about doing their business?
Well, again, it's just identify what your risks are, understand what the issues are, and understand what your recourse is. So, you know, we can tell you what the risks are, we can tell you what the rewards are, but at the end of the day, you need to make that educated decision and you need to know what the consequences are of your decision.
Hmm.
And Craig, what do you think?
I'm thinking of, you know, retailers, for example. I know Pick and Pay said they were going to trial Bitcoin at their store, you know, at the innovation store in the Cape, and a few other retailers that are looking at bringing cryptocurrencies into the ecosystem. Does that still present the same level of risk, or does it become different in those instances?
Well, they must understand that with Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency, the value is determined by the peers and the amount and the demand.
Okay.
So, you know, it's not linked, you know, our rand is linked to what the value is from an economic perspective.
Yes.
So you take that risk. So today you could do a transaction with Bitcoin for the value of 50 rand, but tomorrow that 50 rand is worth 10 rand.
Okay.
So in a way you need to understand what the fluctuations is in the value. And I suppose in a regulated environment, the fluctuation is you've got the economists that look at it and look at all the factors.
More predictability around it.
Exactly. So the cryptocurrency is, for me, a bit esoteric. Like, what are the factors that go in besides the demand and the amount? Who determines that the value today is 50 rand versus 100 rand? Because you're determining on your peers to make up that determination. So accept the Bitcoin, accept the cryptocurrency, but just understand that there are risks.
So you think it's more of a marketing approach at the moment than it is a fundamental integration into their systems? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, to add on to what Christine said, because of that regulatory nature, no creditor is under any obligation to accept it as a settlement of debt. So if you want to procure Bitcoins and make purchases, or you want to settle your debt in that regard, you'll have to take the risk that it's going to be accepted through the prerogative of the creditor or his choice.
Yeah.
So there's no obligation for him to accept it, and that does pose a risk for you, because what do you do with all this?
So you could have R1 million worth of Bitcoin and you come to me and you tell me you want to buy my car, and I'll say, that's very nice, but I want hard, cold cash.
Yes.
I want South African rands, please.
Yes, okay.
Deposited into my bank account.
So the reality for them right now is that there is no protection, whether it's from an economic performance perspective to say if the economy is performing well.
And it's not a recognized legal tender everywhere. So you can't just walk in with your Bitcoins and say, I want to use my Bitcoins here, because you'll have some people say, well, go to the shop next door.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We don't accept that form of tender. And I find it then interesting. I mean, lawyers typically, you know, your work is to deal with risk and to manage risk. But it seems you're also evolving your business model fundamentally. I mean, you're engaging on this topic and you're looking at where the opportunities lie. What's driving that in your world? Is it really a push from your customers? Are you seeing something in the ecosystem that's suggesting you need to engage more?
It's about engaging. From a personal perspective, if I want to remain in practice and remain relevant to my clients, I have to evolve as well. I have to be a thought leader. I have to look at things differently. I have to come up with ideas and I have to come up with solutions.
Yeah.
So you have to evolve. If you're going to practice law like you did 30 years ago, then I don't think you'll be around in the next 5 to 10 years. The profession itself is changing. You know, I always say, you know, when I was younger and I wanted to be a lawyer, you have this thing of being in this grand building and people just come to you.
Yes.
And it's not about that anymore. It's about you've got to engage with your customers. You've got to engage with your clients. You have to be in their face. You have to show them that you can add value. You got to show them that you're different. So in order for me, selfishly, to be in practice for the next 10, 15, 20 years, I have to evolve. I have to think of things differently. I have to start looking at other areas where the laws are going to change, or there's going to be new laws. Most probably in 30 years' time, I might not be an insurance regulatory lawyer anymore. I could be some other law that doesn't exist, or some other industry that doesn't exist. So it's about evolving
with the industry. And Craig, you've been studying in recent time, you know, qualifying to be a lawyer. Has the curriculum, is it engaging these new topics, or is it still pretty much what it's been all along? What is the experience you've had?
Unfortunately, yeah, that's the case. And I find myself where I'd have to sort of learn on the job and do the additional, and it's not a case of just applying what you've learned in varsity anymore. It's about coming into a new world, a new era, and being willing to learn about all these developments and being able to apply it as you go on the job. But it's not definitely about just having that in your backpack and opening the book and just setting it up and applying it.
Okay, awesome. So guys, you know, before we wrap up the show, I'm going to ask you really two questions that will help us to get a sense for how you're engaging, you know, the world today. As you know, on the show, we really focus on the topic of disruption. We try to define it in whatever way, shape, or form it takes place, and we really try to create context for how it's shaping the world into the future. And I'm going to start with you, Craig. Very quickly, for yourself, in the work you do, how would you define disruption?
Sure. Disruption, I think it's going against the norm. Going against what we've always been doing, the traditions, finding creative means to for convenience, for efficiency. And I think we live in such a fast-paced world that people want efficiency, they want comfort, they want security, and disruption would sort of encapsulate all of that. If it works for me and it's quicker, then that is what I would engage into.
Thank you. And Christine, you've been in the industry for quite some time, so you've got a broader perspective. With that experience, with that perspective, and observing how things are evolving now, your definition for disruption?
Is embrace the disruption, embrace the change, and evolve with it. Things are going to change. Things are never going to stay static. And the more you challenge it in a negative way, and you refuse to change along with the environment around you that's changing, then I think you will just become obsolete. So look at ways at how a disruptor can become positive for you, and how that disruptor can influence you in a positive way.
Before I ask you the final question, I want to just get into that a little bit, because typically you might be called in as lawyers to defend an incumbent's position. Right, where there's a disruptive force or energy coming into the system that you might know is likely to become mainstay. Within the definition of disruption, how are you helping your customers then, from, you know what I mean, to understand that, okay, we can defend your position, but it's not going to be sustainable. This is something for the future. How are you engaging that currently?
Well, again, it's to highlight the risks for them and to say to them, we can try to do this. It's going to be a disruptor. it's unregulated or it's in the gray space.
Yes.
And then you get clients will say, let's just go for it. Let's take that risk. Let us be the disruptor. You know, we're willing to, you know, to take the knock. We're willing to get that fine.
Yes.
We're willing to push the boundaries. So again, it's all about making educated choices and you know, and just not looking at things in a black and white perspective, understanding that there's a gray and understanding if you're going to operate in the gray, there's going to be some risk, but deciding where you want to play and deciding, you know, do you want to just be behind the pack or do you want to be at the front of the pack?
And then your vision for our country and our continent within that?
I'm extremely positive about South Africa, about Africa. If you look at these things with Brexit, I think there's wonderful opportunities. We've got a lot of skilled people. We've got a lot of young people coming in with great ideas. And I think people must, you know, get off the negativity train and just kind of work together. And everyone should attempt to be a positive disruptor in whatever they do, be it in their job, be it in their family life, and just be positive and move on.
Awesome. Positivity. So really looking to be a positive disruptor. I like that, within all aspects of your life, wherever you have the opportunity to do that. Thank you very much, Craig DeBrain and Christine Rodriguez from Hogan Lovells Attorneys, for joining us today, talking about, you know, digital money and disruption that's coming into the insurance and financial services space. We've really enjoyed having you on the show. We hope you can join us again in the future. We can see how the space is evolving, because I know it's moving extremely quickly. So thank you for joining us. For our sponsors, T-Systems, for making the platform available once again, we're really appreciative. You can, if you've only caught a part of the show, you can download the podcast at the end of the show and really get into some of the insights we've got from industry experts on how the digital world, digital currencies, cryptocurrencies, digital money, all these concepts, how they're affecting life going forward and how we need to engage them. Thank you for joining us. Have a wonderful day. Thank you for being with us on Disrupt with Mpumi Nhlapo. Have a wonderful day.
This is Disrupt with Mpumi Nhlapo, powered by T-Systems. This is CliffCentral.com.